Welcome to the Books of Titans podcast, where I seek truth in the world's great books. I'm your host, Eric Rostad, coming to you from the beautiful Books of Titans studio in Franklin, Tennessee. My goal is to read 200 of the great books over the next 10 years and share what I'm learning. I'll talk a bit about each book, tie ideas together from a variety of genres, and share the one thing I always hope to remember from each of the great books. Well, today I have a fun and special episode for you here where I'm going to compare a Hollywood film with the book. And so I'm covering the movie Troy. It was released in 2004, so 20 years ago. And at the very end of the film, it says, inspired by Homer's The Iliad. And so I'm going to compare Troy, the movie, to The Iliad by Homer and see what Hollywood got right, what they got wrong, and ask the question at the very end, should you watch this film? So let's get started. Let's do this deep scholarly work of watching movies and comparing it to books. So I want to start off just by giving some leverage to Hollywood. And just to be fair, I want to state three things right at the start here. First off, they are limited by time constraints. And so this is a 2-hour and 43-minute film. Just to give a reference point, I read The Iliad twice, and both times it took me over 20 hours to read the book. So just taking the Iliad itself, compiling 20 hours worth of material into a under 3-hour film is a work in cutting and removing just to start off with. So there's a huge limitation just in there in what to put in the film and what not to put in the film. But not only that, this story, the movie, covers a lot more than what is actually in the Iliad. So when I first read the Iliad last year, I was very surprised that there is no kidnapping of Helen, there is no killing of Achilles, and there is no Trojan horse, all part of what I consider to be the Trojan War. And so the Iliad takes part in just a few week period within all of that, and there's references to each of those things as well within the Iliad. But in the Iliad itself, you do not see those three major things. Those three major things are all part of the movie. And so they're actually taking a story that is broader in scope than what is actually contained in the Iliad, even though at the end they say this is inspired by Homer's Iliad. So first off, just the time constraint and the amount of content they're trying to put within a 3-hour period of time. The second constraint, or just, you know, to be fair to Hollywood, there are so many characters in the Iliad. So just to, you know, if you were to put all those in a film, you would just get confused. And this is a star-studded cast, so, you know, you're recognizing people and who they are. But, like, if they're just to put everybody in the film and give them names and, you know, refer to them and all that, it would just be, it'd be way too much. And so that's a second big piece here where for a film, they naturally are going to have to cut down on to just the main people in the story. The third big limitation, and this is one they imposed upon themselves, is that the gods are not actively involved in the movie. If you've read the Iliad, the gods are quite involved, and they are shifting arrows to where they don't hit the intended target. They're whisking people away out of battle. The first paragraph of the epic talks about the will or the plan of Zeus and how that's being put forward throughout the whole book. And so they have removed that aspect of the film. So there are no gods except just like some routine comments about how the Greeks should honor the gods. And there's scenes in temples to Apollo and that kind of thing. But there's not, you don't ever see the influence or the involvement of the gods in the film. There's none of that. It's all put into human characters or human desires and lusts after power, women, battle, all these things, but the gods are not involved. And so that vacuum has to be filled with something else. And so what the film does is to mainly place Agamemnon's lust for power as the driving force. And so, yes, you have the wrath of Achilles. You see right away this battle kind of between Agamemnon and Achilles. And even though they're on the same side, Achilles does not like Agamemnon being the leader, and Agamemnon just kind of puts up with Achilles because he's the greatest warrior ever. So that's where the focus shifts. Instead of the gods, it is to Agamemnon's lust for power, and that just kind of flows throughout the movie. So without the gods, you also lose a key aspect of the entire thing and the reason for the story to begin with. And again, this is not in the Iliad. This is in other works, but it is referenced in the Iliad, so you can kind of get pieces of it. But there's a piece that kind of started this whole thing off, and that's called the Judgment of Paris. And so this takes place at the wedding of Peleus and Thetis. And those are the parents of Achilles. So Achilles being one of the main characters. Here you've got the wedding of his parents. And Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite approach Paris at this wedding, and they offer him different things. And so the judgment of Paris is who is the most beautiful of these three gods. And so Hera offers Paris the power. She offers him to be the king of Europe and Asia. Athena offers Paris wisdom and skill in war. And then Aphrodite offers Paris the world's most beautiful woman. And so which one do you think Paris chooses? He selects Aphrodite. He selects the world's most beautiful woman, thus kicking off this whole story, because Helen at the time is married to Menelaus. And so to get Helen, Paris must take Helen from Menelaus. And that's what kicks off the whole Trojan War. Again, not a part of, you see in the film that Helen is taken from Menelaus. It's kind of in a lover type scene of where Paris and Helen are lovers at that point. So there's not a sense of kidnapping or abduction, but more they're having a fling and she goes off with him. But that starts off the war. Again, it's placed in human context and in human point of view. And you don't get this backstory of the gods kind of setting this whole thing off. So I want to start off just this going deeper by reading the first paragraph of the Iliad. And I'm going to use the Emily Wilson translation to read this first paragraph, but just to get us in the mindset of what we're looking at here. Goddess, sing of the cataclysmic wrath of great Achilles, son of Peleus, which caused the Greeks immeasurable pain and sent so many noble souls of heroes to Hades and made men the spoils of dogs, a banquet for the birds. And so the plan of Zeus unfolded, starting with the conflict between great Agamemnon, lord of men, and glorious Achilles. And that is the first paragraph of the Iliad. And so you see the cataclysmic wrath. And I love that she says cataclysmic wrath. It's not just anger. It's not just wrath. It is cataclysmic wrath. And that is the very first line of this epic. But then the other key point in that first paragraph is the plan of Zeus. And so it's the plan of Zeus, in Wilson's words. Other translators will say the will of Zeus. And so again, that part is completely removed from the film, but you do see the wrath of Achilles. And even in the first scene, you see Achilles' wrath and anger at Agamemnon. So let me get into now the main differences, and they're quite big differences between the movie and the story. So let me start with these differences, and then I will get into the things that I think the film did well. So starting with the differences, right away, you get. So once Helen has been taken and the Greeks are assembling and they're going to war against Troy, you see this scene of the thousands of ships, or a little over 1,000 ships going from Greece to Troy. They're headed that way. And in the film, Achilles' ship is first. He reaches land first, and he gets there and just starts kicking butt. What you don't get, and what actually happens in the Iliad, is there is a 9-year period between when the Greeks decide to go to war and when the Battle of Troy actually takes place. So they go there right away, but there's kind of all these battles around Troy. And so you don't get that sense. You get this sense in the film that it's immediate. Achilles goes right there and starts kicking tail and just doing that. But there is a long period of time there. The next big difference is with Briseis. And Briseis is She's a key figure in the film, key in the Iliad as well. But she is she's taken from Lyrnessos, and it's during an attack in one of these 9 years prior to the Battle of Troy. Her brothers are killed. She's taken and she's given as a prize to Achilles, and they become lovers, I guess. But she's a slave. She's taken. Her family's killed. Or most of her family is killed, and she's taken. So in many respects, or all respects, she is a slave, but Achilles really takes a liking to her. And so you get this sense that there is a deep attraction there. Well, in the film, it's very strange. Achilles comes in, and in that first scene of the, like right when he gets off the ship, he goes up, there's this temple to Apollo, and Briseis is like a priestess in that temple. And Achilles and his men, they kill all the priests, they kill everyone in this temple, and then they take Briseis, and she's given as a prize to Achilles. So that part's correct, but her being a priestess is not correct. And then her, like, the scene is she goes immediately into Achilles' tent, and then they have kind of like a 3-minute antagonistic meeting. Like, she doesn't want to give him his name, her name. She's just seen all these people murdered, and now she's taken. And there's no love scene or anything between them. It's just a weird thing. And then the very next scene, Agamemnon takes Briseis from Achilles, and like Achilles is so upset about this. But why? Like, he's just had 3 minutes with her. Like, she was not warm to him at all. It's so weird, and it doesn't even make sense. So I'm not sure why they did that, but that is a big departure from the story. And then just throughout the film, what they do with Briseis, in who she kills, and like all this different stuff, like it didn't happen at all. So, that was quite strange. But, in the film, she also tries to kill Achilles, while he's sleeping, and he's sitting there saying, yeah, do it, just do it. But that we don't get that sense in the Iliad, the book. And then, at the very end of the film, which there'll be a lot of spoilers in this episode, so if you've not seen the film, or first, if you've not read the book, read the book first. But if you've not seen the film, maybe just watch the film and then come back. But in the film, she returns with Priam to Troy, and then that sets up Achilles going into Troy to like get her in the last scene, and then Achilles is killed in that scene. But that's not what happened. Briseis was not, she did not return with Priam when Priam came to ransom Hector's body. And then in fact, the stories after the Iliad give an indication that Briseis after the Trojan War just would have been passed off to another soldier on the Greek side. So very different from what we have in the Iliad to what is in the film. Now let me get into probably the most startling scene and the biggest just departure from what happened in the story. And this one upset a lot of people, and rightly so. But in one of the just most incredible scenes in the Iliad, you have Menelaus fighting Paris. And remember, again, Paris has stolen Helen from Menelaus. And this is kind of the thing that kicked off the whole Trojan War. And towards the beginning, you get a single combat between these two people. I mean, these are the two people responsible for the war, and they're going to just battle it out single combat. And then whoever wins that determines the rest of the war. So, you know, you're reading the Iliad and you're like, wow, right away, they're going to battle each other. Is someone going to die here? There's no way they can die. These are the two main people. And so in the film, you get this as well. It's almost right at the, actually at the middle point of the film, but you've got Menelaus and Paris battling each other. And in the Iliad, the book, you know, Menelaus just comes out strong. Like, Paris is not a fighter. He's a lover. And so you just get the sense that Menelaus is going to kick butt. And he does. And the same in the film. And so in the book, the Iliad, Aphrodite whisks Paris away at a certain point in the battle when he's about to probably get slaughtered, and puts him into the bedchamber with Helen. So he's with Helen. He's just been battling Menelaus. He's just about to die. And the gods come in. Aphrodite comes in, saves Paris. Remember, Paris chose her out of those at the judgment of Paris. He chose her. So she saves his life, gets him out of the battle. And Menelaus is just like, you know, what happened? This guy just disappeared. And so they're very clear involvement of the gods in that battle scene. Well, in the movie, because you can't have, Hollywood decided not to have gods in this movie, the whole thing shifts to where, Menelaus is like kicking butt. And then Paris is kind of begging for his life. He's hugging his brother Hector's knees, and Menelaus comes to finish Paris off as he's kind of groveling on the ground, and Hector stabs Menelaus and kills him. And so this is just so, I couldn't believe it when I saw it, because this is so different than the story. And it just sets the entire story off. And further than that, that it takes some guts to change Homer's story. Like this story's been around 2,500 years or more. And you change like the key thing to fit the Hollywood story of the film. It was strange. But now if Hector's killing Menelaus, like that doesn't happen. Menelaus does not even die in the Trojan War. He goes back home. He ends up being reunited with Helen. They live the rest of their lives together. And so Menelaus makes it through the war. Helen makes it through the war. He does not die right away at the hand of Hector when Menelaus is about to finish Paris off. So that is the most outrageous, near blasphemous thing that happened in the film. And it just sets it off for like, what are you going to do now? Because now you've completely changed the story. And Menelaus is the reason for them being in this war, because Helen was taken. So you've just removed the reason for the war. And so what the film does is just really put that extra emphasis on the lust of power of Agamemnon, who is Menelaus's brother, puts that thrust on that lust for power for Agamemnon. And then that's kind of what drives the narrative forward going, from there. The next big, thing, and this is a powerful scene in the film. Hector has mistakenly killed, Patrocles, thinking that it is Achilles, and so Achilles finds out, and then he just goes by himself on this chariot. He goes to the walls of Troy and just starts screaming, "Hector! Hector!" And so Hector's like going, saying his goodbyes. He's going to go single combat Achilles. And in the background, you just keep hearing this, "Hector! Hector!" And so it's a very powerful scene, but it never happened. The single combat did, but not that scene. And in fact, it's a different way around. In terms of somebody yelling for Hector, the person who is yelling for Hector is his father. It's his father, Priam, and he's begging. He's absolutely begging. Him and his wife are begging Priam to come into the gates, to not go out there and to fight him. And so I want to read this part, because it's different from the film, but it's very powerful. And so this is from the book. This is book 22. Stretching out his hands, old Priam said, imploring him, "No, Hector, cut off as you are, alone, dear son, don't try to hold your ground against this man, or soon you'll meet the shock of doom, borne down by the son of Peleus. He is more powerful by far than you, and pitiless. Ah, were he but dear to the gods as he is dear to me. Wild dogs and kites would eat him where he lay within the hour and ease me of my torment." Later on, he says, "Come inside the wall, child. Here you may fight on to save our Trojan men and women. Do not resign the glory to Achilles, losing your own dear life." And I'll stop reading it there. But so in the film, you've got Achilles screaming out for Hector to come out of the walls. And in the book, Hector is already out of the walls, and Priam, his father, is just imploring him to come back inside of the walls and not to fight Achilles. So again, just a very powerful scene, powerful scenes in both respects, but the movie kind of shifts it around to what actually happened in the film, in the Iliad book. At the very end of the film, Agamemnon is shown inside the walls. So they've gone in with the Trojan horse, and Agamemnon is now in the inside the walls of Troy, and he goes up and he kills Priam personally and just puts a sword right through him. That did not happen in the Iliad. And then Briseis kills Agamemnon, and that did not happen either. So Agamemnon actually makes it out past the war, but when he gets home, his wife kills him. And she, at that point, his wife has a lover. But many consider the reason that his wife killed Agamemnon is because he sacrificed their daughter to appease the gods for war against Troy. And so thought is that his wife has this, 10-year just grief of their daughter being sacrificed for the sake of the Trojan War, for smooth sailing of the Greeks to Troy. But she kills Agamemnon, and it's just, it's nasty death and not glorious at all. But Agamemnon does not die at the hands of Briseis as he does in the film, and Priam does not die at the hands of Agamemnon as in the film. In fact, Priam is killed by the son of Achilles, who is called to the Trojan War. He's not there when Achilles dies. He's called after that, and then he is the one that actually goes and kills Priam. A few other things is that in the book, the whole first half of the book is there's a big emphasis on Diomedes, and he's kind of he's on the Greek side, but he's kind of the Achilles character while Achilles is on the ships not wanting to do battle. So he does not show up in the film at all. Again, I attribute that to just there being so many characters in the book that you just can't have all of them. And so the writers chose to keep him out. In the battle between Hector and Achilles, there is divine intervention that takes place. For instance, Achilles throws a spear and misses Hector, and then Athena grabs that spear and gives it back to him. You don't see any of that intervention because there are no gods in the film. And then in the film, you get this scene towards the end where Odysseus is sitting on the beach by the ships, and there's this guy next to him, and he's whittling this horse, and he's going to give this horse to his son. And you see Odysseus's mind kind of turning, like, ooh, what if we made a horse and gave that as a gift, and then they took that into the city. But in the Iliad, the epic, Athena, the god, helps Odysseus, and they kind of concoct this plan together of the Trojan horse. So in the film, you've got the man whittling and then Odysseus getting, but there's intervention by the gods again, and again, something that does not show up in the film. Just a few other differences there's a lot of differences. I'm just kind of focusing on the main ones here. Achilles does not find Briseis at the end of the film like he does in there. Again, she's just kind of at the, from what I recall, she's at the Greek camp the entire time. So she would not have been back into Troy. The last thing I want to highlight is it going back to the start of the film. It shows Achilles being the first one off the ship. He is not the first one. There is someone else. And that shows up in the Greek epic fragments. So these are stories that kind of surround the Iliad and the Odyssey. But the first person off of the ship actually gets killed. And there's a prophecy that the first person off the ship will get killed. So the film shows Achilles, and I'll get into why I think they did that in the next section, but that is not the case in the book. He's not the first one off of the Greek ships. So those were the differences. Those are the things that Hollywood decided to change in the story of the Iliad. So now I want to go on, and I want to give credit to the writers and the producers of this film, because they did do a good job on a number of items. And so that's what I want to cover right now. And so the first one is just the opening scene of Achilles facing off in single combat. So you've got this scene where there's two armies facing each other, and then they decide to do a single combat. They call Achilles to be the person for the side of with Agamemnon, and they can't find Achilles, and he's with women, and so they get him. He comes into battle, and he just immediately finishes this guy off. But the way they did it was brilliant because it captured a lot of aspects of Achilles. And in this film, Brad Pitt is the Achilles character. But what they've got in this single combat scene right at the beginning of the film is, first off, Achilles running. And so Achilles is known as swift-footed, fleet-footed Achilles, and he's a great runner. I actually read this morning in Pindar, the Odes, which is a collection of stories about Greek athletes, but there's a lot of mythology tied in. I read this morning that Achilles can run as fast as a deer. And so when he's hunting deer, he's not using weapons, he's not using traps, he's just running and then catching up with deer, which the internet tells me deer can run 35 to 40 miles an hour. So Achilles is known as a fast runner. And so in this single combat, he just starts running as fast as he can towards the opponent. So that was a great way to show that he's this fast runner, and he's dodging spears being thrown at him as he's running towards this guy. And then the way he kills this guy is he jumps up in the air and then stabs down between the neck and the collarbone. And then the sword goes down into the man. Achilles pulls it out, goes past him. You see the man standing for a little while and then kind of falling to his knees and then just falling face first. So Achilles hits, you know, whatever vital organs inside, just going straight down with the sword. And what's amazing is this coincides very closely to an actual killing that Achilles does in the book. And so I don't read this. And so the last thing I read, the very first time I read from the book, the first paragraph, that was the Emily Wilson translation. The other part I read was the Robert Fitzgerald, and then I'm going to read from Robert Fitzgerald again. And so this is Achilles battling this man, but I want to read just the part of the killing here. At this, the young man's knees failed, and his heart. He lost his grip upon the spear and sank down, opening his arms. Achilles drew his sword and thrust between his neck and collarbone, so the two-edged blade went in up to the hilt. Now, face down on the ground, he lay stretched out as dark blood flowed from him, soaking the earth. And I'll stop reading it there. But that when I read that, I was like, oh, that is very similar to that killing in the book. So they did a great job with that scene. Just to introduce you to Achilles, you see a lot of the aspects of Achilles. You see his opposition with Agamemnon. You see just this like brashness about him. You see this ability to take a soldier. It's almost like a David and Goliath scene where there's this soldier on the other side that everyone is scared of, and Achilles just, it kills him immediately. It's not like this long drawn out battle. Like Achilles is so good, he just goes up and just dispatches this guy immediately and kills him in that same way that he kills the guy in the book. So the next thing that I thought they did a good job on was something I covered in the first section of where they diverted from the book, but I thought they did a good job with it. And that is with Achilles being the first off of the ship once they reach the land of Troy. And so again, there was this 9-year period that the film does not refer to, as it does not show, you know, there's, you know, nine years later or something like that. But in that, the limit of time of just a 3-hour film, their solution is to show that Achilles was the first one off the ship and that he just starts going crazy and killing people. And that's legit in the sense of, in those 9 years, Achilles was going around to the areas around Troy, and he was just kicking butt. Like he was the main soldier. And in fact, part of why he's so upset with Agamemnon is he is getting a certain amount of prizes for being this awesome soldier, but Agamemnon's getting more prizes. So, but Agamemnon's not doing the fighting. He's just the king. And so Achilles does not feel like he's getting the proper respect and honor for this. But just showing Achilles being the first off the ship and killing all these people before any of the other ships get there, before the ship with Agamemnon gets there, it's kind of a brilliant solution to the limit of time in the film, just to show that Achilles is this amazing soldier and that he has done a lot of the work around Troy before anyone else. Another thing that the film did a great job on is just showing these 1,000+ ships. And so it's this incredible panning out scene where the camera is on Achilles, and then it just spans out, pans out, and you've got Achilles' ship, and then it keeps panning out, and then you start seeing all the ships, and you just imagine all of these ships going from Greece to Troy to fight in this war. It just is one of those things. I tried to capture that in my mind while I was reading the Iliad, but it's one of those things, like, until you see it, until you see the full ramifications of what would 1,000+ ships look like traveling on the ocean going towards one destination. And it's startling. So again, the film did a great job on that. They simplified the embassy scene. So there's the scene where Agamemnon sends three people, Odysseus being one of them, to Achilles to try to give him gifts to get him back into the battle. And Achilles does not comply, but he does change his mind a little bit. In the film, it's just Odysseus kind of going up to Achilles man to man. So you get the same basic idea of there's this plea, and Odysseus is there because of Agamemnon. So a little bit of a difference, but I thought that was a good solution just to get the same basic idea across. Another thing that they did a good job on was the Priam ransom scene. Now in the Iliad, Hermes, the god, does guide Priam. And so when Priam gets into the camp of the Greeks, he says, you know, I know this land like the back of my hand. So that's how I was able to find this. So again, they kind of get rid of the divine aspect of him getting there. But there is this sense that Priam has gotten there. And so you have the elements that are all there in the story where there's this one part where Priam kind of pushes a little bit and Achilles gets angry, and you almost get the sense that the whole thing might be called off, this Priam coming to ransom his son. But you also get this just heartwarming scene. You get Priam kissing the hands of Achilles, the man who killed his son. You see Achilles weeping over Patroclus. And so a lot of the things that are in the book, they captured in that scene. And it's just it's an amazing scene, but it's a heart-wrenching scene, and I thought they did a great job on that. The last part where Achilles is killed, he is killed by Paris, and so that is correct. And the first shot by Paris hits Achilles in the heel, and then he's lying on the ground, and then he gets up and starts walking towards Priam, and Briseis is there like, no, don't do it, Paris. And Paris keeps stringing the bow and keeps shooting Achilles. So he shoots him 3 or 4 times in the chest. But what you see right before Achilles finally falls down for final death is he pulls the arrows out of his chest. And so once he's there dying and dead on the ground, these people come upon him, and all you see is this one arrow in his heel. And according to the legend, his mother dipped him in this special sauce that kind of protected his whole body, but she had to hold on to his heel to do that. So his one vulnerable spot was his heel. So I thought that was brilliant. You've got Achilles laying there, and if you come across his body, he's got this arrow in his heel, and it looks like, oh man, arrow to the heel is what killed Achilles, but it wasn't that. But the way they did it, I thought was brilliant there. And then a nice touch at the end of the film, and Aeneas shows up, and Aeneas is not there in the rest of the book, although, or in the movie, he's all throughout the book. He's kind of like Diomedes on the Greek side. So Aeneas is on the Trojan side. But Aeneas is where we get the Aeneid. And so Aeneas survives this battle of this sack of Troy. And he's who brings himself and others to Italy and to what starts off the Romans. And that's the story of the Aeneid. And so there's this nice little scene at the end where Aeneas comes off and, or comes by and you see him kind of leaving and fleeing, but just a way to kind of continue the story on. So those are the items that I thought they did a great job on in the story. Now I just want to talk about the movie itself, a few things, and then ask the question, should you watch it? So the movie itself, so David Benioff was one of the writers, and he is the author of a book that I read for my 2019 reading list, City of Thieves. So you may be familiar with that book. It contains one of the most disturbing scenes that I've ever read in a book, just what they did to somebody. But that was a very popular book. He also co-created the show Game of Thrones. And so you may recognize him there, but he was one of the writers for this film. As I mentioned, Brad Pitt was Achilles, and this fact just blows my mind. But during filming, he suffered an injury, and guess where? He suffered an injury to his Achilles tendon, which caused a several-week delay in the filming of the movie Troy. So Brad Pitt, playing Achilles, gets injured in his Achilles tendon, which causes a delay in the filming. Like, you can't make that story up. That's incredible. As I mentioned, it's a film from 2004, so we are in the 20th year of the film at this point. Overall, like, I'm just amazed there are not more movies about the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, even like the Epic of Gilgamesh. There's just so much in these stories, and perhaps it is this aspect of there being so much that how do you even capture that? And what parts do you focus on? Do you just focus on one part? I have seen a few other, it looks like to be miniseries of Troy or miniseries of the Odyssey, and they have not reached the popularity of this film, but there are some others out there, and perhaps a miniseries is the better way to approach one of these works. But it is surprising to me with just how these stories have lasted through the ages that there are not more films. But then also in tying it back to Troy, just how with these stories lasting through the ages, how you have the audacity to change the story in some really drastic ways, that was shocking. So I want to highlight one other part and just something I noticed in watching this film. And it's, I read the Iliad twice. I read it once in September, starting in September of last year, and then read it again in March of this year. So September 2023, and then March 2024. And I watched the film in between. So I wanted to read the story. I wanted to read the Iliad before I watched the film. And so I did that. And what I noticed is watching the film after the first off, I loved the film. I really enjoyed the movie. So if I've kind of bashed it in this episode, I enjoyed the movie. But what was interesting watching it the second time is that there were characters that I had forgotten about in my first reading, and Diomedes was one of those. There were characters I had forgotten about that I encountered again in the second reading of the book. And it just got me to thinking, like, I'm really bad with names. So I'll go to an event, somebody will tell me their name, I will forget it within a few seconds. But if I connect with them on social media or something, and then I see their name with their face a bunch of times, then I will remember their name. Or just if I don't see them anywhere else or on social media or something, I have to meet them like a bunch of times before I remember their names. And I've noticed just in myself, in my reading of fiction, that I have a hard time with fiction. And most of it is just in remembering names. And so a practice I've started is just anytime I read fiction now, I take one of the pages in the back of the book and just start writing all the names as I encounter people. And that can get to be tedious because especially like a Russian novel is going to have so many characters and they have different names and people call them different things, even though it's the same person, and it's confusing. But that has really helped me, because then if I get lost and I'm like, who is this person again? What did they do? Who are they? I can look at the back of the book and I've made enough kind of just general notes about the person where I can remember them. But what was startling to me in the second reading of the Iliad is just that I remembered everyone who was a character in the film. And the people I didn't remember were not in the film. And so I was wondering if there was some sort of an aspect of the visual part of seeing the film and seeing the characters, if that tied in my brain just kind of a deeper remembrance of those characters. And it's something I want to explore more. And I'm also wondering if it just has something to do, because I've talked to other people too, that they don't read fiction for that very reason, that they just have trouble remembering the names of people in the book and then tying those names. And so they won't even read fiction for that reason. And so I was wondering if people who have good recollection of names, do they remember names in books more? And people like me that have a hard time with people's names, do I have more trouble with in fiction than someone that doesn't have that? This is something I was thinking about while going through this, but just as you know, what's something I can do? I don't want to watch films before I read the books. I always want to read the books first, but perhaps if there is a film tied to it, it encourages me to watch the film after reading the book. And that might help in my recollection of the book. I always want the first reading to be mine, to where I imagine things out of my own head, imagine how the ships would have looked, the battle attire would have looked, you know, just kind of imagine those scenes in my head. But sometimes I find that it is nice to have some other images as well. I just don't want them to be the first images that I have of the story. So if you've ever thought of that, or you've noticed something similar, please let me know. But I'm wondering, and I think I'm just going to try to start watching more of the films to really get the characters, because then I can tie an image of a character with that person. So the downside is now I always have Brad Pitt as Achilles in my head, but at least I have a picture of somebody when I think of Achilles. I have a picture of the walls of Troy when I think of the walls of Troy. I have a picture of 1,000 ships sailing on the ocean. They may not be 100% correct as to how it actually was, but it is some sort of a picture in my head. So now the final thing is, should you watch this film? I think you should. But I do want to challenge you to read the book first. If you've never read the Iliad, just drop everything you're doing, read the Iliad. It is now my favorite book, but do that first, and then perhaps go to this film. You can rent it on Apple TV, like $3 or $4, and that's what I did. And it just, you know, watch it that way. But I think it's worthwhile to watch the film. Just know going in that it is drastically different from the book. And so if you're watching it with kids or something, read the book first. Read the book first is what I say. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this deeply scholarly discussion. I'm just kidding. But just a fun discussion here on movies versus books. If you have watched Troy, if you notice something else, if there's something you want to highlight or share, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at eric@booksoftitans.com. And you can follow it, Books of Titans, on Instagram or Twitter. I've got a website, booksoftitans.com. I've got a ton of resources there, all my reading lists. I've got the great books list that I'm going through right now. I'll be back next week, and I'm going to talk about the Atrahasis. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but that is the deluge story from Babylon. And so I'm going to talk about that and perhaps compare it a little bit to the Noah story in the Bible, the Noah deluge story, flood story. Until then, keep reading, keep learning, and keep listening. I'm out.